and welcome to the Top Shelf Hockey Cast, where we talk hockey, mostly Islanders hockey. I am David Tuckman, joined by, once again, BD Gallif and our normal partner in crime, it is Phil Farber. Phil, BD, how are you guys? Happy holidays to both of you.
We have been missing BD. We missed BD on the last one. BD went away.
COVID protocol. It was COVID protocol. We brought up a guy from the AHL named Andy. He did an okay job. I mean, him and Zarnik, I'll put him in the same light. But now we're, we're back with Josh. BD, Gallif.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. I have to have a mea culpa on Josh Bailey, because originally I argued that it was because of other items, but it's starting to look like age a lot more as the season goes on, and I'm also seeing him less against elite competition. So
I can't even tell. I mean, I feel like we haven't seen
it's so bad.
I feel like I haven't seen a hockey game in 4 years.
Yeah, I know. So. It's been a while.
I was talking to someone about this today. I refuse to believe that it's a product of age. It just can't be. It can't be that this guy, who was so productive in the postseason, how many months ago are we talking about? We're talking about April, May, and June, or May and June. He was one of the most productive players. He was scoring clutch goals, overtime goals. He was scoring on Vasilevsky even. Maybe it's mental, and it could be a product of the fact that he's played with unfamiliar line mates. Although Leon Barzell should be familiar to him. I don't know what it is.
But he was at his worst with Nelson and Beauvillier early on in the season. So I don't know. To me, this has been, it has been coming. You know, I've said this many times. I think he was vastly underrated by Islander fans when he was 25, 26, 27, 28 years old. But the decline has been steady. And I just think for a player who is more cerebral, relies on the cerebral part of the game more than the physical part of the game, I think that it's finally catching up to him. And, you know, maybe he was able to just kind of muster it together for a, 15, 20 game stretch in the playoffs. But over the regular season, it's just not something he can do anymore. And now at 32 years old, he's just being exposed.
It's really a shame. You wonder, it's the key thing. He's a playmaker. And usually age is what hits your shooting percentage. And let's be honest, Josh Bailey is not exactly known for the scoring. He's known for creating opportunities and first assists. And he just seems a jumbling mess. And what I noticed when I was, and I'll be saying this a couple times about how he's been used this year, it's a lot less against elite competition as opposed to previous years where a lot of his time was against the elite competition. So, he's definitely been shuffled around, and it's definitely showing some definitive weaknesses, and, whether it's a combination of things, it's going to be interesting to see, because we're reaching a point where if he's not part of the solution, then maybe he's something worth moving just for the picks.
Yeah, we'll get into that. I mean, moving him for the picks, we could discuss whether they could get any picks for him. I don't think Phil.
That's true too.
I think we might need to give up picks to move him. But I don't know what you mentioned him playing against elite competition. He's been their most used forward on almost every night. It's gotten to the point where it's just mind-boggling. I think in that Vegas game, he had roughly 2.5 times the 5-on-5 ice time as the Parisi Bellows Zarnik line. It's inexplicable.
Yeah,
and we'll cover that.
Phil, okay, this brings us to the first one. I wasn't going to start off with this, but we've kind of gone this direction, so we'll go there. We're going to answer a few questions. Maybe we'll go a little bit into the NHL today and kind of talk about what's going on in the NHL. Games are back. Rangers lost as we are filming this on December 29th, and just for anybody who knows, the Rangers lost in regulation. Booyah. Phil, what are they now against top 10 teams?
I think against the top 10, I have them at 2-7-1. And top 10 teams, we're talking about Calgary, they're an 0-for-2. They are 0-for-2 against the Avalanche, 1-1 against Florida. And that one win against Florida, they got outshot by like 2-1.
Yeah.
It was a Shesterkin win. They are 1-1 against Toronto. That was an overtime win. Wasn't pretty exactly. I think they were outshot 2-1 in that game as well. And that is their record against what we would call the top 10 teams in the league by points percentage.
Well, we can Ranger bash in a little bit, but first, there's a bunch of things we want to go over. One of the things, like I said, I wasn't going to bring this
Washington,
up now.
They got curb stomped by Washington in the first game. How could I forget that one?
Love it, love it. So one of the questions we were going to ask ourselves, and I don't think any reasonable fan or reasonable person thinks that Barry Trotz is a bad coach. I don't think any reasonable person thinks that Barry Trotz should be fired as of yet. I'll just throw that out there. You guys might disagree with me, but I don't think any reasonable person believes that. I do wonder, though, are we starting to lose faith in Trotz? And it comes off the heels of what you were just talking about with Josh Bailey. I'm just wondering what game he's watching when he gives Josh Bailey 20 minutes of ice time. I'm just wondering what game Barry Trotz is watching when he puts Sebastian Aho in over Robin Salo. I'm just, you know, what game is he watching? Because I'm thinking of going, oh, trust Barry, trust Barry, trust Barry. I'm like, I like to live by that mantra, but I'm watching hockey, and I've watched a lot of hockey in my life, and I'm going, these guys aren't very good. What is Barry seeing that I'm not seeing? BD?
I think it's, no. Well, let's answer the first part. Trotz is an excellent coach. I don't think he should be fired by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think he's made a series of mistakes and seems to be doubling down, if not tripling down, on a stubbornness and an unwillingness to maximize some of the players and put them in better situations. You know, look at the team's makeup. You look at a team that this team is sacrifices the offense. I think this was said in the Athletic piece that another coach had said. And
I mean let's be honest. My grandma would say that. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Sacrifice offense to minimize 5-on-5 chances.
Yeah.
And if you lack offense, which seems to be even throughout this, you know, I know that we've dealt with a bevy of different things, including COVID. But if you're playing that game, it's a razor thin line. And last season, they succeeded. This season, it's not been good.
Okay, but forget about
they
that.
They keep pushing the same buttons.
Yeah, but okay, forget about the buttons, though. Forget about the buttons, because these buttons clearly work, BD. The buttons work. You know, everybody wants to, like, we all like, oh, yeah,
well,
you know.
Well, does it work? Because Eberle's gone. I mean, does it work? Some of the Letty's gone.
Okay, but let's okay.
And we can minimize.
BD, stop for a second. I want to keep our eye on the ball. Okay, we're not talking about Letty gone. We're not talking about Eberle. We're talking about simple this season. Are we, as fans, and I like to think of us as semi-intelligent, the semi part being, you know, semi, very semi, are we losing faith in Barry? Because we all thought we were ready to build a statue outside of the new stadium. You know,
I don't
before.
Think it's losing faith. I think that he's made a series of interesting choices, and I don't know if it's really benefited this year or anything that has really worked. But he's still a capable coach and coaching system below him. So that hasn't changed. I do think a good question is Trotz's voice still reaching the players, especially the young players? I think Andy brought this up, and Andy and I had a side conversation about this. Also, there's a question to be asked, is especially with, you know, the young players that seem to not being able to play well. Nobody seems to be gelling. And you do have to wonder if that voice has the same strength in the room that it had before. And we certainly hope, and I certainly hope, that it still has sway and they right the ship. But I don't, you know, to me, there is definitely questions to be asked on Trotz, but I don't think that for any stretch of the imagination, he should be fired.
Phil?
So I think we need to start out by understanding kind of the Trotz philosophy and what BD was touching on. They play a style that sacrifices some offense to limit high danger chances. He does that with this particular group. You know, he doesn't have Ovechkin anymore. He doesn't have John Carlson anymore. He doesn't have Nick Backstrom anymore. He doesn't have Kuznetsov anymore. He doesn't have that whole plethora of offensive powerhouses and all-stars that he did in Washington. So the idea that's thrown out there that Trotz hates offense is just, it's just untrue. He would trade all of his forwards for all the forwards I mentioned above, and they would be curb stomping teams under Barry, like they did when he was in Washington, when they were President's Trophy winner, when they were Stanley Cup winners. He came in with a game plan this year. They returned mostly the same team. The two big changes was Palmieri for Eberle, right? And Chara for Letty, which we all know was a big mistake. There was no sense in him, again, talking from Barry's perspective, abandoning the things that worked for him for the prior 3 years, A, in such a short sample size, and B, in a season that's been so chopped up where they started off on the road. They had a lot of COVID disadvantage. They've had injuries. They had a second wave of COVID. Now they're in a third wave of COVID. I think he's tried to stick with things for as long as possible in the hopes of getting them going, moving Josh Bailey back to the top line, which is a move he's done in years past and a move that has worked in the past. And it's just not working out this year. I don't think necessarily that he's lost the room. I think that part of going with the Bailey and the way that he goes with him has to do with not wanting to upset the leadership class in the locker room. And that's the Lees and players who have been veteran players who have been with the team for quite a while. And if you all of a sudden you're throwing Josh Bailey down to the fourth line, 15 games into the season, that might be a bad message, especially when everything is going wrong. So I think there's more to it than what we fans on the surface see, where it's Wahlstrom, good shot, good player, put him on top line. Bailey, let's send him to the press box. When there's all this history in the locker room and player relationships that need to be taken into consideration, and the track record of success that he's brought in with him from the previous three seasons.
I think it's an interesting thing you bring up there, because I do think that, and I think Barry has made this very clear, you know, I'm not interested in fantasy hockey. I'm not playing fantasy hockey. I'm dealing with real people and a real team. And I think when it comes to hockey, you know, chemistry, the locker room does matter. So, you know, I think that is a fair criticism of fans, and including myself, that, you know, if they suddenly played Bailey 13, 14 minutes instead, what would the reaction be in the locker room? The one thing that I was excited about, and I think we saw this right before the shutdown, was Bailey has been taken off power play one. I think it's not a coincidence that power play one has caught fire the soon as Bailey got off of it. You know,
power
Dobson
has been elite.
Say it again.
Power play one has been elite.
Yeah. I mean, I think with Dobson moving the puck quickly, with Oliver Wahlstrom on one side, with Palmieri in the bumper, you know, with Lee down low, that is a power play that is to be reckoned with. So maybe for Trotz, BD, it is coming down to, okay, well, I can't go cold turkey. He's not blind. We know Bailey isn't what he used to be. I'm going to start taking away little things. I'm going to start stripping it away slowly. I'll move him here. I'll move him there. I'll take him off power play one. I'll put him on power play two instead. The one thing that is blowing my mind, though, and is inexplicable, is how is Sebastian Aho in the lineup? And that is where I'm like, what am I seeing that Trotz isn't seeing? Or what's Trotz seeing that I'm not seeing, I should say, rather?
Well, yeah, I think we're talking about that five-game stretch there where they came back they returned Pelech and Green and all these players. And the once Chara came back from COVID protocol against Detroit, I think it was, Sala went to the box for 4 or 5 games in favor of Aho. And during that time, you had Aho, who probably gave away 2 or 3 points there in the standings to Nashville, just absolute dumpster fire, just garbage turnovers, no idea where to be in the defensive zone. Against Chicago, he served up a go-ahead goal for Chicago on a tee to Dylan Strome. Struggling player, come play against Sebastian Aho. He'll help you out. Top shelf. Both games, the Islanders lost, of course, in the final seconds to Nashville in regulation in a shootout to Chicago. And it took 4 or 5 games for Barry to finally make the right decision, which is to play Robin Sala.
Why did it take him that long? I mean, we knew it before that game won. BD, you were saying, we all were on the same page. We were
I've
all
heard
there.
From the Islanders, people that I spoke to on the Islanders that didn't understand it.
Right. I mean, listen, so I get the Chara thing. I get the Chara thing. He's a veteran. They brought him in, bench him 15. I get the Bailey thing. You don't want to upset the locker room. Okay, for lack of better word, and pardon my French, but what the fuck is this, like, utter loyalty to Sebastian Aho, BD?
I don't know, and I think that maybe, and I think this is a question, maybe this was about, well, Aho should be the next in line. He's been waiting longer. You know what? You're trying to right the fucking ship here. It's not always, you know, this culture situation of the next guy when you're trying to do something.
Yeah.
And it was obvious that Salo is the only answer that they have possibly to fill in the gap, because they're not getting a top four type of player. And let's not, I'm not saying that Salo is, but he's a good prospect. He's highly valued, and we've seen him play.
At the end of the day, I mean, whether Salo fits the mold, doesn't fit the mold, he's just better than Aho, right? I mean, he's just better than Aho. And by the way, BD, I love when you curse. Please do that more. Phil.
Yeah, and I have to change the parameters when I put this with the explicit content.
Again, I'll just galaxy brain a little bit, right? We were talking about a decision on the heels of Goleshev leaving, which was on the heels of Komarov leaving, which earlier in the season was on the heels of Timoshov leaving, right? So again, all these things in a vacuum are not a big deal, but it's not very often you have three contract terminations in the first 6 weeks of an NHL season, right? Which raises a whole separate question as to what the hell is going on in Bridgeport that people just simply don't want to be there. But if you look at the way they handled Goleshev, right? He's an outsider and didn't get the shot that was expected by the fans, maybe even by the general manager, because the general manager did call him up and it was a lineup decision by the coach, and Barry took ownership of that. It could be what Beattie's saying. Aho practiced and was a part of the team for the past 2 years, and simply a function of he's the older guy. He's the guy who's been with the group. It would be a poor look if I just went immediately to Salo and sent Aho to the press box. And that's the only thing I got. That's all I have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it makes no sense. On a talent level, Salo's got more size. Salo's a more physical player. I don't know.
The analytics. Which has been an ongoing issue that I have with this team and that I'll keep on bringing up. I don't feel like they even bother to look at the analytics. And they get reports. Trotz gets a report every fucking game. Nobody seems to be looking. Nobody seems to care. And I think that's what has led to how they came out this season from the preseason. And I still think that there are echoes of it throughout. And it's, you know, everybody on God's green earth knows that Salo is the better player.
Yeah, it's crazy. Okay, well, this is a good segue then. Phil, you raised the question, do they have what it takes to go on a streak like the years past? So a couple of years ago, they went on a 15-0-2 streak, and that kind of propelled them throughout the regular season into the playoffs. Last year, they went on a 12-0-1 streak at one point. So despite some of the losing streaks here and there, they went on those streaks. And this will tie into BD's thing of, you know, when are the playoffs out of the reach? Are the playoffs still a legitimate possibility? Is it a pipe dream? Or is it, you know, a long shot that can be attained? And I think these things are tied in together. Does this team have what it takes to go on a long streak? Phil?
It's going to be difficult. It's going to be more difficult this year than in years past because they haven't been able to establish any sort of team chemistry with all the pieces that have been out, right? Every single time you think they're getting the band back together, all of a sudden there's more COVID. They start playing decently, they lose Matt Barzal. We had talked about after the pause that in order for the Islanders to hit the 98-point threshold, which has never missed the postseason, which, you know, you're probably looking somewhere between 94 and 97 this year based on where Boston is and by points percentage they have that spot, they would needed to have burned at a 650 rate. Since we last spoke, the three of us, they've been at 556 or somewhere around there. At 3-2-4.
So for people who don't know, 556 is below 650. continue on. I just want to make sure we're clear. I just want to make sure we're clear that everybody knows where we're at. Okay, go ahead.
So, you know, you look at four overtime losses, and they're 0-6 in overtime this year. Those things are absolute killers, right? If you get half of those, you're much better off in the standings. Every point makes a big difference. I think the hard thing this year, they now have six guys on COVID protocol. They're all forwards, right? They got the defense out of the way in one batch. I wish that, you know, the virus would have mixed and matched a little bit, but right now they have, with Palmieri injured also, they only have five regular forwards. So it's going to take a 12-0-1 or a 15-0-2 or the kind of December through February they had in 2018-2019 in order to get them back in this thing. Right now, they're 8 points out. You look at the standings, you'll say they're 11 points out. We've got five games in hand on the Red Wings. That's not who we're chasing. We're chasing Boston. Can they go 9-point pace better than Boston? Sure, they can. They have the players to do it when they're all healthy. We've seen them play better of late. It'll require Trotz utilizing players in roles that suit them, limiting Bailey, elevating Wahlstrom, and he looked good on the top line in that game against Vegas. And ultimately, if they do put themselves in a position where they're competitive, only then do you talk about addressing the gaping hole on defense.
Fair enough. Okay, so I'm going to go on a limb and say that that was the moderate, since, you know, we live in a political landscape right now. We'll say that Phil was the moderate. BD, I'm going to go on a limb and say you're going to be on the negative side of this. Yep, I knew it. Okay, see, I knew it. Yeah. See, it was like unleash fucking BD Goloff today. Day, I like it. So, BD, let's roll. What's the negative take on this?
I think, you know, it's sad to say, but I kind of think it's a pipe dream because there's too many things that are not working. And to do all those things, they have to be working and you have to be playing the right players and finally making the decisions that they're unwilling to do. Sit Chara. That's the fucking answer. But they're not willing to do it. They're not willing to bring in and play the youth and, you know, at least address and start to ease Salo into more time. You know, those items, and you also have to depend on elite goaltending throughout to get them to that situation where maybe they can do it. And I look at Palmieri, and I still feel that he's in decline, and the penalty minutes show it, that frustration of when you lose speed and you try to compensate. And, you know, when he comes back, I still feel that these are still attributes that still affect the team. When you add in all those variables, I think it's tremendously difficult. So I'm of the thought of, I'd rather see the team tank and start moving players for picks and retool, because I don't see this and keep the core, but I don't see how that is feasible. And I certainly don't think that Trotz and Lou are going to do that. But to me, I feel like it's almost a pipe dream because so many things need to happen.
Yeah,
I don't take pleasure in that, but
yeah, we always talk about tanking on Twitter, and it's a lot of fun to do. So I'm not on the let's start selling pieces today. Let's go out and, you know, shop every single expiring contract we have and then some. I think they're going to get everyone back, including Pulock, probably in about a week and a half from now. It looks like they're playing tomorrow against Buffalo. It looks like they're going to have that game against Edmonton because Edmonton's in the States right now. I want to see where they are when everyone comes back in the standings. Are we 6 points? Are we 4 points? Are we 12 points? And then I'll be able to formulate a better opinion once everyone is back and plugged into the lineup as to where I think this team is going to be. And that's not going to be for another couple weeks from now. The Athletic has them at a 10% chance of making it. Feels about right. Even that probably feels a little bit optimistic.
Listen, okay. Can I pipe in with a little bit of a glass half full mentality now?
Go ahead.
Okay, first of all, if the Athletic is going to give me 10% and they want to give me 10-1 on the Islanders making playoffs, let me know. I will take out a fucking second mortgage, okay, at that price. The Islanders are far. Now, are they likely to make the playoffs? No. Are they better than 10-1? Absolutely. Now, I will give you an optimist point of view. Okay. we have gotten, this team has been hot in November, in October, in December. And then generally speaking, this team has kind of flailed at the end, gotten into the playoffs and done pretty well, right? When Pellick got hurt, when Clutterbuck got hurt. I mean, our 15-0-2 streak was what, November into December a couple of years ago. So I'm only wondering if you could, if you knew you were going to make the playoffs and you could pick and choose when your losing streaks were going to happen and when your winning streaks were going to happen, in an ideal world, we would love the winning streak. We would love this team to go 15-0-2 in February and March, heading right into the playoffs. Now, the reason that gives us a little bit of trepidation and we're scared about this is because we might not make the playoffs. Now, I will say that this team, if they can get healthy, they're still a really fucking good team. I mean, I still look at this team and I think to myself, if Nelson is our second line center and if Wahlstrom can play well and Barzal is Barzal and we can get Pellick and Pollock back together and all these different things, I still think this is the kind of team that can very easily go on a 10-11 game winning streak, go on a 14-15 game, you know, point streak. And once they do that, that 650 becomes 550 the rest of the way.
Probably a little bit less than that.
Maybe even less than that. Now, my caveat in that. So I genuinely think that this team, and this is not, I'm not just blowing smoke up people's ass. I genuinely think that this team has the pieces in place right now, actually. I don't even think we need to make a trade. I think they have the pieces in place right now to go on a streak. My concern, and this goes back to what I said earlier, is have we lost faith in Trotz? Have I lost faith in Trotz? I just don't know if Barry is willing to do what needs to be done. Now, taking Bailey off of power play one was a huge step in the right direction. Somehow getting Pollock and Pellick back together, I don't care what you have to do, but figure it out. Getting them back together as one of the most dominant defensive pairings in the league back together is a huge thing, right? So if we can start doing that and the power play continues to click and the players come back and start playing better, I think the goaltending will follow. And I do think this team has what it needs to go on that kind of streak and possibly make the playoffs. I just don't know if Trotz does it or not.
And that last point is the biggest part. It has to do with the goaltending too, because as good as Sorokin has been at times, there were some times on this most recent stretch, namely Detroit, where they lost 4-3 in overtime. Against Vegas, he wasn't particularly good. He's been great. He's been very good. But he hasn't been at the level that they had Varlamov at last year or Lennerat in 2018.
You're absolutely right.
Or Lennerat in 2018, 2019. And, you know, people easily forget, but out of all starting goaltenders, Varlamov led the league in save percentage. Varlamov was tied for the league lead in shutouts. He was a brick wall last season. And Leonard was a brick wall and a Vezina finalist 3 seasons ago. And as good as Sorokin has been, he just hasn't been giving them the extra cushion that when a mistake is made. And in some instances, it's been Sorokin's mistakes. I mean, he's let up some horrible goals.
And I actually think, and BD, you can talk about this. You've been around the hockey team for much of your life. As a hockey player, I actually think it's more demoralizing. Sorokin makes the most miraculous saves, but he lets in some really bad ones. And I actually think that's more damaging from a morale standpoint, from a team standpoint, than saving the impossible ones.
Well, what the team in front of the big difference of and everything, and just to push in here, everything that you said, I felt was very possible, Dave, if this was the same team as last year.
I think it's a better team than last year.
Well, then you're crazy.
I don't. I think it's a better team if they can stay fucking healthy. We haven't seen the team.
But Varley last year was, as Phil said, it was a brick wall. And when he was on, he was at an elite level and the team in front of him played better and trusted. They don't with Sorokin. Sorokin has played as good as a starter this year. Not elite, not incredible, but had some really good patches as a starter. But he's a starter who needs razor sharp focus. And what he's done back in the KHL is when the pressure was on or pushed against that wall or in the playoff or in that situation, he would come out big. We saw it with Pittsburgh in the playoffs last year. When it, that pivot is when he, it, but can, the consistency is not quite there. Can he be better? I think so. And I definitely think we've seen that he is a starter and he is the starter of the future, but there is a huge difference. And that's the thing. They need the Varley or Sorokin to play that level of that we saw last year where the team can thrive in front.
I think with the Islander system, and this is something we all agree on, by the way, in terms of goaltending, you know, when you listen to some people, some of the prominent Twitter personalities when it comes to the Islanders, they were talking about, oh, this is Sorokin's team. When Varlamov was, like, injured, he hadn't even played a game, and they were like, well, I guess Varley is the backup now because this is Sorokin's team. And I'm going, did everybody forget how good Varley was last year? It was just like, it's almost as if they just completely forgot that Sorokin was rather inconsistent last year, had his moments of brilliance, and that Varley was absolutely, as you put it, a brick wall. It was... And I think it kind of brings me to the point of the disconnect between our fans, some of the bloggers, their perspective of our prospects, and some of the players. Some of them will, they talk about Sorokin as if he's already Vasilevsky.
And he's not. You're seeing his development, and that's going to take time. He's not coming in a fully baked player that has had NHL time. This is a higher level of competition. And that takes time and adjustment, and also to, you know, the Barry Trotz system is a completely different system where the goaltender is the main pivot, and, you know, or the linchpin, we should say, and, you know, that becomes more important. In the KHL, if he's a little loose or a little sloppy, you know, they tend to be more offensive bent games until they get into the playoffs, where he really thrived. He has a great pedigree. And if you look at his KHL numbers, they're fantastic. But that time and development to be what they need him to be is still not happened yet. And that is a process.
Listen, I don't think, again, you might say it's early, but I don't think he'll ever be Vasilevsky. I think he could be a top 10 goalie. I think he's getting close to top 10 territory, but people are talking about him as if he's some kid. He's only a year younger than Vasilevsky. Vasilevsky's 27 and Sorokin is 26. They're like 13 months apart or something like that. Mm. So it's not like we have some 22-year-old or a 20-year-old like Spencer Knight. And again, that's a whole nother story with developing goalies at a young age. But I think he came in as pretty much as close to a fully baked product as possible without the NHL experience. And we saw him kind of show some maturity against Pittsburgh. And earlier this season where he stole a couple wins, like their first win against Chicago, and he had a great shutout against Winnipeg earlier this season. So we've seen the flashes of brilliance. The question is, will he ever get to a level where he can elevate to the point where, you know, where Varlamov was last year, well, or Leonard was last year? That's what it is for me. Yeah. I don't have the expectation that he's going to be the best goalie in the game. I don't even think he's better than Igor Shesterkin. I think he's a very fine goaltender. Like you said, Dave, we got into a little bit of a Twitter tussle last night with a certain fan who thinks that it would be sacrilegious to have drafted Braden Point over Sorokin, who was the pick directly after Sorokin, which to me is absolutely insane. But maybe this is what he is.
Yeah. And for that argument, by the way, Phil ended the argument because we could no longer make it a sensible argument, because you then said, oh, I would give seven first-rounders and Sorokin. So I was like, okay, well, we're not going that far. But yes, I think your point is well said.
A little bit of hyperbole. A little bit of hyperbole.
This is the thing with Sorokin. He might be the most athletic goalie in the NHL. His quickness is unparalleled. The problem is he lets in – it's almost like his angles aren't quite there, or it's just – the best goalies in the league, they just don't move that much. The ones that move a lot, they just tend to be inconsistent. I think it's one of the reasons why you look at a Marc-Andre Fleury and he could be the Vezina winner. He could lead your team to the Stanley Cup 1 year. And the next year, the Pittsburgh Penguins are giving you a second-round pick to take them off their hands. Here's the important thing about Sorokin, because I'm a fan. I think he's a very good goalie. I think he will be a good goalie. In the NHL, and you and I talked about this, Phil. Goaltending is kind of a dime a dozen. Outside of the Hall of Famers, the Vasilevsky, the Patrick Roy, the Martin Brodeurs, the next, say, 10 to 15 are all good enough to get hot at the right time and lead you to a Stanley Cup. Now, the bottom ones, forget about those guys. But I think Sorokin is clearly in that group of goaltenders who can be hot enough for a 25-game stretch and win a cup for you. You know, I mean, we saw Holtby do it in Washington. Holtby's not. I mean, he's not a Hall of Famer. But he got hot at the right time, right? I mean, Jordan Binnington in St. Louis. Okay, he got hot at the right time. What?
If I could cut in, I mean, Robin Leonard has been terrible for the past 2 years.
Perfect example. It's just goaltending. It's one of the reasons why I'm never a fan of giving any goaltender a large salary and a lot of term. I remember when Bobrovsky was up for a contract, people were talking about, oh, the Islanders should sign him. I'm like, please don't. Went to Florida. He was terrible. Now he's been pretty good this year. Goaltenders they're just an inconsistent group on the whole. And I think to me,
unless they're at that certain level, yeah.
And unless, like I said, Patrick Vasilevsky is that. But I mean, it's Vas and then the next 15. And I really think that 2 through 15 are almost interchangeable depending on what defense is in front of them and who's hot at the right time.
I think it's a fair estimate. There is definitely a loose middle. And I think Sorokin, it has the potential of doing exactly what you said, of being able to be that key pivot for a big stretch and carry for a bit an elite level and raise his game, especially when he's pushed. And it also...
By the way, I agree with you 100%. I mean, Thatcher Demko in Vancouver, he's that too. I mean, I do think that, I mean, I don't want people to listen to this and think, oh, Tuck hates Sorokin. No, I love Sorokin. And I think Sorokin is the guy who will help us win a Stanley Cup one day. I also just don't think he's a Hall of Fame goalie.
Yeah. And, you know, there's not many Hall of Fame goalies.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, there's definitely room. And this is what's so frustrating is that Varley doesn't seem to be Varley. And how do we, you know, do you try to get him in more to get back to that? And can he get back to that? Because, you know, if we're talking about a key run for this team, you really need Varley and the confidence that the players have with him in net. That was what was so big in previous seasons. To bring it back around.
Yeah, so. No, I think that's fair. I mean, to me, if the defense gets going, the offense can start feeding off of that. The goaltending will feed off that. It's all one engine. And when one thing doesn't work, you know, and we talked about Chara. When Chara doesn't work, and then you've got to break Pellick and Pulock up, and then suddenly that affects the offense because you're into the zone, and suddenly the goaltenders are letting a couple of softies in, so the defense starts cheating. I do think it's one machine, and if one cog is out of place, especially with the Islanders, as thin a margin as you pointed out, as we play with and we try to win games with, if one cog is out of place, it doesn't work. Phil?
Yeah, and I'm hoping Varley gets back to where we need him to be. I think the breaks probably benefit him the most. He was out with an injury before the season started, which is why Sorokin started the first 13. He started the first 13 games, right? Or seven games, whatever it
was.
That's
about right.
No, not the first 13. I think the first seven. And then they had that break, and then he came back. But Varley's most recent game, he came within 50 seconds of a shutout. And it wasn't all pretty against Boston. I mean, he was kind of flailing a little bit in the first, but he really settled in after he stopped Pasta point blank. And a very unfortunate goal got by him when they were already up 3-0 in that game. But I agree with Beattie. I think it's key to get Varlamov going. Hopefully all this rest has done him good and let him heal up from whatever injury he had. And if you could get two hot goalies going forward like they had in the previous seasons, again, it was Leonard, it was Greiss. It was Varlamov and Greiss, then alternating games the season after. And last year, it was Varlamov for the most part of the beginning, but once Sorokin came in and started getting comfortable, he got hot too. So it takes two really, really talented goalies to get a team somewhere in the NHL, and the Islanders need to get back to that if they're going to ultimately make some noise here.
Yeah, okay, so another thing you guys brought up here, Phil, you brought up a question here. We talked about making the playoffs, not making the playoffs, when they decide we're out of it or not. If the Islanders do ultimately fall out of it, and some people have given them the time horizon of the next 6 weeks, I think we could know in the next 3 or 4 weeks if they're out of it. Who goes? Who stays? What are the hopes?
You could start with the obvious ones, right? Anyone who's going to be an unrestricted free agent this summer, and that includes Green, Parisi, Clutterbuck, Chara, if someone for some reason wants him as a seven vet presence kind of guy in the way that we wanted Coburn last year, those are the guys I would look at. My worry is that with the exception of Parisi, who I don't think would want to come back next year, to be honest, based on the experience he's had with this group this season, with the exception of Parisi, I'm not sure that Lou would do that, because Lou is very into being a gentleman in the league, if you will. And when he establishes a relationship with a guy like Andy Green, I don't see him, knowing that Andy's whole family is in the greater New York area, shipping him off to the West Coast or wherever it might be at trade deadline. I just don't.
He only does that to Golishov.
I mean, Golishov did that to himself. But point being, and again, there is merit to it too, right? Because when players are looking at organizations that they want to be a part of and where they want to sign long-term, like in the summer, you have to think about the optics of what it would mean to trade Andy Green for a third round pick to a destination he doesn't want to go to. And then how that would resonate with when you're trying to negotiate a contract with a big free agent, whether it be Forsberg or any other big name that you might be talking to this summer, as to how they'll be treated in the organization. So there's definitely something to that, and a cost-benefit analysis when evaluating a third or fourth round pick versus, optically speaking, uprooting a guy who has to be away from his family for 3 months. But those are the obvious ones. If you want to take it one level further, Varlamov's going to be in a contract year next year, and there are teams like Edmonton, if Varlamov is open to waiving his no trade for that, to go help a team like Edmonton out. Colorado, maybe a reunion there, because their goaltending has been absolutely awful this season. And then Scott Mayfield, right? If we were talking about David Savard as a comparable, and David Savard went for a first,
a third, 1, 3, and 4.
A 1, a 3, and a 4. I think the 4 was sent to
the 4 Detroit. Was for salary reasons, but
so that
you
was
could argue right, but you could right. argue that Mayfield would get at least that, if not more, considering his contract is so favorable, $1.45 million, and he has another year left on it.
Yeah. So if a team is willing to do that for Scott Mayfield, who to me is not a guy that you want to be extending at the age of 30 after next season, by all means.
I have a soft spot for Scott Mayfield because took my son to a LA Kings New York Islanders game. We went there for a warm up, and Mayfield came out the stretch and came over and gave my kid a puck and a stick, and it was very cool. But all that said, business is business, and as much as I love Scott Mayfield and I think he's a good hockey player, I think he's the exact kind of guy that you should have the foresight and go, okay, where do we want to be 12 months, 18 months from now? Is this a guy that we want to extend? And then you talk about asset management. And right now, you talk about, you know, selling a stock at its highest price. I think right now, selling Scott Mayfield, coming off a summer where defensemen were getting too much money, and, you know, we got a 2 for Letty of things. I mean, you think if you could get a 1, a 3, and 4, you could really, really restock the prospect cupboard, so to speak. BD?
Right. And again, before BD comes in, we love Scott Mayfield, right? But
he's fine.
Again,
yeah.
The one thing that we've seen, though, from this season is why he's not paid as a top pair defenseman, because he's been thrown into situations where he's had to play top pair. And at $1.45 million, he's not a $1.45 million defenseman. He's probably a $3 or $4 million defenseman. But anyone who has the expectation that he's going to fill Pulak's shoes while Pulak's been out for these 6 weeks, you're seeing it now, and the defense is suffering, right? Late in the Vegas game, terrible decision with the puck, gave possession right back and ended up in the back of our net. So it's hard to ask so much from a guy who's making so little, but that plays into it also. He is who he is. He's a bottom to mid pair defenseman who's on a great deal and who's entirely replaceable in the offseason. So let's get some assets.
Yeah, I mean, to me, he's not a 1, 2, or 3. He's not a 6, but he's a 4 or 5. He's a nice defenseman. He'll eat some minutes for you. He'll kill some penalties. He's going to be physical. If he plays against the other team's top line, he's going to be exposed. We know that. But he's fine against the other team's second line. He's a really good player and the exact player that I think 10 playoff teams will be like, yeah, we'll take him.
And there it lies the problem, because here's a guy who plays a lot of elite minutes. I told you when I looked at the how the team uses him last year and this year, most of his time on the ice is against elite competition. Now, that Annie's a Trotz loves him. Lou, I don't see him going anywhere because of those things. I don't disagree that he would bring back and key picks to restock the cupboards, because the prospect pool, and we'll get to this later, is not as good as people think. And, you know, he would be a great value. But I also think he's a key player for Trotz's system. And that's why they wouldn't view him as expendable, despite he's coming up in age. Because God knows that hasn't stopped Lou before. Age. Who need multi-year deal? Who cares? I don't see that happening. I do think they should, if all goes south, Varley, Bailey, you know, those player Green.
What are they getting for
Bailey? I disagree with the thing. He's lucky to still be playing.
Bailey, realistically speaking, what is Bailey movable?
Who's lucky to still be playing, Bailey or Green?
Green.
Green has been fantastic this year.
He's not. He's not playing elite competition.
He's not asked to, though.
Middle to lower, that's his predominant of his time. And so is Dobson, by the way. He's not being utilized. And Dobson, if you look at his, was very sheltered last year, barely saw any time against elite competition. So that jump that they expected was based on no data whatsoever that they were hoping for. But, you know, Green is not a bad player per se. But I think expendable.
You literally just said he was a bad player.
He's expendable because you don't want to bring him back at age 40. But I think any team going into the playoffs who needs a defenseman to shore up their bottom pair would love to have him for something like a third round pick.
I mean, if you're Colorado, you want Green or you want Jack Johnson?
You want Andy Green, 100%. Right. I mean, that's the kind of team that would want him. I mean, he is still one of the best penalty-killing defensemen in the game. Analytically, he has seen a massive jump in his defensive impacts this season. The only pair that it wasn't working with him with was Mayfield early in the season against the super elite teams, which were Carolina and Florida in those first two games. And then when he was kind of trying to drag Sebastian Aho around with him, but he's made Dobson better ever since Dobson started playing with him, right? You could see the difference between the Dobson Green pair and the Dobson Chara pair, just analytically and visually speaking. I think Green has been doing everything that you expect from a guy who you're paying $1 million to, and probably a lot more.
And still expendable.
Neither one of us is saying that you should keep Andy Green. We're both like, yeah, if we're talking about players,
but I don't think
very good this year, and he's expendable because he's on an expiring.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I think so too. And trade Shannon Hogan with him.
Wow.
No, nothing against her. I just thought it would be funny. I feel that the Clutterbuck issues with Hogan that is clearly going on during those interviews is extremely unprofessional. And I'm surprised that the team hasn't said something to him, because
what was that all about? I mean, I don't know. Everybody's going nuts about this.
Some sort of seems to be not liking the questions. Well, it's the fucking press.
Yeah.
This press is fucking softballs. I don't understand him rolling his eyes or, you know, doing that whole little drama. Because the press here is
I had no issue with it. It's right after a game. It's in the middle of a hard season. I mean, it wasn't this like propped up like thing. It was just It just happened. It was spontaneous. And I'm saying, yeah, it was spontaneous. She asked him a question. He was like,
it wasn't the first time. It's happened before. Yeah. And I don't know what his issue is, but I was kind of surprised that it's continued. And, you know, Clutterbuck is a great guy. And I know people that know him off ice and, you know, obviously a hard and on your sleeve type of guy. But I was a little surprised because, you know, this is a team that is usually very professional and not really in character. And I understand that the season is frustrating, but he's been here with frustrating seasons before. So
let's get back to Bailey though, Beatty. You think they could get anything for Bailey?
Yeah, that's, I mean, legitimately, I'm asking.
Let's look at teams like Seattle who can't seem to get offense going. If they feel Bailey just needs a fresh start and it's not age.
Okay. Maybe. Okay. Let's forget about the if. Forget about the if. I know you've been, you know, you've been in and out and talk to people. Do you legitimately think? I mean, yes. Listen. I mean, the fact that Seth Jones got the contract he got, we know there's GMs out there that are stupid. We know that. The question is, do you think that Bailey is movable and can actually get an asset back to do that?
Yes.
Wow. Because that would be, to me, that would be a better coup than getting rid of Ladd's contract or getting rid of Letty. To me, that would be because Bailey, to me, at this point,
he's a negative trade asset. He's a kind of, to me,
and he's making $5 million.
He's making $5 million for two more years. If he was an expiring deal, he'd have value. The problem is he's got two more years after this, which are his age 33 and 34 seasons. When I do a quick cap friendly search, the two things that pop out at me are Buffalo and Arizona are both about $30 million below the cap floor for next year. And they're going to have a bunch of young players who are going to be on ELCs, and that's not going to help fill it up. Maybe if you're lucky, Buffalo gives you a sixth round pick and doesn't charge you something to take him. Maybe, just because they need to be at the cap floor.
But maybe, is there a way that he could be the future considerations in the Boychuk deal?
Well, I think Buffalo owes us future considerations.
That's okay.
The future consideration for helping their cap situation this year is they take Bailey too. You know, I'd like it. It would be kind of cruel to send him to upstate New York, but business is business.
And, you know, those things, if the team truly was faltering and falling apart, and that's the thing, it's when I brought up that they should just tank, that's not reality. That's not what Lou will do. That's not what the team will do.
It's not, by the way, it's what almost no team does that. Every fan base always talks about it. Say it again.
Yeah.
It's not what the players will do.
No.
Yeah. They'll play it out. And that's, you know, and that's the thing, because they really need, you know, some, and that's why I just can't see them being able to put it together, because there's still gaps.
Let me ask you this. When Pulock comes back in 10 days, let's say everybody's healthy on this team. BD, give me what you think our 18 will be. Let's say everybody's healthy.
What they need, Pulock and Pulock together.
Okay, keep going though.
To make that.
But what's work. The eight? What's the 18? Is it Martin? Forget about the obvious ones. But is it Chara? Is Chara in there?
No, he should be out.
But what do you think they do?
I don't know. That's the thing, because every indication is they're going to use him, and everything, he needs to be put with training wheels to be utilized where he's not a negative attribute.
And by the way, this is what I brought up. This is what earlier on when you said I was insane for saying that this team is actually better than last year's team. The reason I think they're better than last year's team, and I don't think they'll play better, is I think the pieces in place, the pieces that are here, are better. I don't think they're being utilized that way. To me, if you put Pulock and Pulock on line one, you put Salo and Mayfield in line two, in pairing, and you have Dobson with Dobson and Green. Three.
That's
Chara is our seventh defenseman.
That's your defense, right? That is and should be the defense,
right? And then if you get Martin off line four, and you do a combination of MDC and Zarnik in there, I actually think
even Panic.
I think the potential. I mean, I haven't seen Panic, so I don't even know. I saw him one game, and then he vanished. I saw him make two good hits, and then I was like, okay. But I just think the potential, if everybody's healthy, is there. I just don't have faith in Trotz to do what we need to do. Phil, what's your like ideal? Do you want Salo in, Chara out, I assume?
Yeah, 100%. My ideal is you have Salo in for Chara, just as you described. You move Parise to line four because I think Parise, Suzuki, Flutterbuck.
Totally agree.
I love that
because he is a four-checking machine.
Yes,
and he's been great on the penalty kill. They've
suddenly a fourth line gets utilized again.
Oh, that honestly, Suzuki's Clutter and Parise.
Oh,
those, teams would hate playing that line.
Bloodhounds. They drive you crazy. And then I would either put Dal Col, and I think we're going to get a chance to see Dal Col. I think we're going to get a chance to see Simon Holmstrom tomorrow night, actually, which is kind of exciting if they end up playing him. It's a little bit early, but between the Islanders and the Bridgeport team having 8 COVIDs, so a combined 15 COVIDs, here you have Simon Holmstrom ahead of schedule. But either Dal Col on with Pageau and Palmieri, or whether it be, I'd even put Kiefer Bellows in there, right? Kiefer Bellows is going to give you a lot more utility than Matt Martin. It's about getting Matt Martin the hell out of there.
Yeah.
And Kiefer Bellows right now has more utility than Matt Martin, even though I don't think he should be an everyday NHL player. He's been better. He's been better than he was last year.
Yes, and I agree.
I can't understand for the life of me why a guy who, he's a great stationary shooter. Just watch the clips of him in junior, watch the clips of him in the AHL. How is a guy who has such a good shot not on the power play? Right? It doesn't require much moving around. So the fact that he's a poor skater won't hurt you that much when you're controlling the puck in the offensive zone. Separate discussion. But that's what it would be for me. That's my ideal. And Wahlstrom on line one. Wahlstrom with Barzal and Lee.
And we've been talking about that for a while. And, you know, I think we all kind of would love to see Bailey's reduced minutes. Whether that happens or not, we don't know. Okay, let's just pivot really quickly before we put a bow on this podcast. And while it has been... We don't know what to expect from the Islanders. It's not all roses about the Islanders. But the one thing that we can always, you know, take solace is the fact that the Rangers lost tonight in regulation. And the Rangers are not nearly as good as people think they are, at least Ranger fans. BD, come on. Let's trash the Rangers for 5 minutes. That's always fun.
Well,
see, it's already putting a smile on your face.
Well, and I also have two younger brothers that are Ranger fans. So, you know, they definitely are falling to earth a bit. It was bound to happen anyway. The question is on this team, as the Rangers falter, how much do they falter? Do they spin out? Do they fade? Or do they rebound? That's the question. That's how the new system and the new coaching, if that can take hold, they definitely have the talent. I think we were all in agreement. This is a talented team, but I think they're faltering and falling to earth a bit. And it's a question if they can rebound or if it gives them more of a longer free fall.
First podcast, I mentioned this and I said, Islander fans aren't going to like to hear this, but the truth is the Rangers are a really talented team and they're going to be a lot better than people think they are. I don't think they were nearly as good as at some point they were like 19-5. And I tried to tell my Ranger friend that I said, this is just not sustainable. Their goal differential at the time was like +4. As of now, it's +8. I will just put this out. I will put these logs in the fire and I'll let you, you'll go with it, Phil. Their last 7 games, they're 2-5. They lost to the Panthers. They lost to the Golden Knights. They lost to the Avalanche, the Predators, and the Avalanche. They're 2-5 in their last 7 with their wins coming against 2 AHL teams. They beat the Coyotes and the Sabres.
They didn't beat the Coyotes. They had help from the
good point.
They had help from the NHL beating the Sabres in that the NHL admitted a mistake in that they got the offside call wrong on Buffalo's game tying goal. And then they had help from the NHL in the third period against the Coyotes where they couldn't get anything generated at 5-on-5. They were losing that game to the Coyotes. And then they were gifted 2 late power plays that they managed to cash in on. They've been looking horrible. And I've been talking to a friend of mine who's a huge Ranger fan about this. And he's worried about what Drury has done with this team in terms of messing up their window. And I think some of it is on Gorton also, but Drury trading away Buchnevich, who's a point for game player with St. Louis for absolutely nothing, is something that's hurt them here. If I could draw a comparable between them and where the Islanders started out when they brought in Trotz, right? They have the elite goaltender, right? So Shesterkin is kind of like that Robin Leonard, right? They have their veteran players who are significantly better than the Islanders veteran players back then, right? We had Lee and Bailey and Eberle and Nelson. They've got Panarin, Kreider, Zibanejad, Strome, and that foursome is obviously better than the foursome that I mentioned. But they're older at this point than what the Islanders players were back in 18 and 19. Then you have a drop off to their young players. And really the only young player that they're getting really significant production out of is Adam Fox. They're not getting much from Kako in the way that the Islanders were from Beauvillier. They're not getting much out of Lafreniere in the way the Islanders were out of, you know, even Oliver Wahlstrom last year. Filip Hedl has been pretty terrible as their third line center. And they have no middle class of players like the Pajots or the Filppulas of years past or the Brassards who have been able to do anything, because guys like Barclay Goodrow and Dryden Hunt and Ryan Reeves, they're just not contributing anything there. So on nights where you don't have either Panarin, Zibanejad, Kreider doing everything, or Shesterkin pitching a 930, they're losing, and that's why they're losing to all the top teams.
Yeah, let's not forget that this team is also going to be cap-strapped as well. I mean, you're talking about Adam Fox's contract, Panarin's contract.
They have no room to add this summer. They have, like,
I had this conversation with my buddy, too, by the way, Phil, because I said to him, when they moved Ryan McDonough and it looked like they were going the direction of, okay, full rebuild, and I said, that's really smart. Then they lucked into, you know, they get Kako, and it's like, oh, wow. And then they signed Panarin, and I was like, wow, I guess that – I kind of just looked like that was a big fuck you to the Islanders, but it didn't make much sense to me. I was like, why are they –
And Trouba for $8 million.
Yeah, the Trouba trade. Right at the gate, I was like, okay, you just gave a terrible contract and a first-round pick for a middling defenseman.
And Pionk, who's better.
Yeah, it was just – some of the moves just made no sense. It was almost as if they were like, okay, let's rebuild and try to compete right now. Where you just can't do both, and I think that's what you're seeing here. So they went, you know, after starting the season off 1-3, they basically reeled off. They went like 11-1 or something like that. But the teams they beat, to your point, I mean, the Blackhawks twice. They beat an Islander team that had, you know, 7 AHLers in it. They beat
Buffalo
the Sabres
twice.
They beat the Canadiens, who have been terrible. They beat the Devils, and then basically, this is a team that just. Like I said, I mean, I love Ranger fans because they love to, like, oh, look at us. We got Adam Fox and stuff. Imagine getting gifted Adam Fox, the number one overall pick in the draft, the number two overall pick in the draft. You get the best player in the offseason to sign with you in Panarin, and your team, you still can't compete with the upper echelon teams.
Yeah, I think the Buchnevich trade really limited this team's upside for years to come. A 26-year-old top-line point-per-game player. I look at their cap situation, and if they move Nemeth off, if they find someone who's going to take the last 2 years of Nemeth's contract, they'll have like $14 million to play with. But what are you doing? Are you bringing back Strome, right? Can you upgrade on Strome? Who's out there? The only one who's a clear upgrade on Strome would be Tomas Hertl. Is he leaving the Sharks? You have to pay Kako this summer, right? Next summer, you have to pay Lafreniere. And even though he's not good, one overall pick still have a certain expectation with regard to the compensation they're going to get. So, given their cap situation, the fact that you now have Panarin, who's 30, Kreider, who's going to be 31, Zibanejad, who's starting what I think is a terrible contract, an 8-year contract at age 29, you're going to have players aging up with no cap room to really improve this team. So unless you have
Sammy Blaze will be back next year, though.
They miss Sammy Blaine.
This is the one thing that's great about being an Islander fan. At least we can laugh about the Rangers.
To a certain extent. They're going to be a playoff team this year. Where I have them ending up, I think they'll probably end up in the top wild card spot because I think Pittsburgh will pass them. Pittsburgh's a better team than them. And then I think they're just going to get waxed by a team like Carolina in the first round. That's probably what it's going to look like.
Sounds about right.
I get it.
Concur.
We haven't been watching much Isles hockey, so we don't have a ton to talk about, but we've been babbling for about 55 minutes. Any last thoughts, BD, before we go?
I was just going to say, what do you guys think about tomorrow night? I mean, they should be playing the Sabres tomorrow night with 5 or 6 AHL forwards. Do we like our chances in our first game in 2 weeks?
Well, I watched a little bit of the Sabre game, and then I'll let BD go. I watched a little bit of the Sabres play the Devils tonight. The Sabres are not a particularly good team. Tage Thompson looks pretty good. I like the way he skates.
Did you see my tweet on that?
No, what was it?
Well, Tage is now up to 12 goals this year. And I said, I wish his dad could do with the baby Isles the things he does with his babies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it's talent. But Tage, not only did he score a couple goals tonight, but he looked the part. He looked good. He looked fast.
He skates well for a 6'7" man.
Yeah, that's what I mean. He looked fast. He looked like a handful.
He has a heavy shot.
You know, it'll be interesting. I mean, we're lucking into, we're the second half of a back-to-back, so we won't get, we won't get their top goaltender.
And then we get Edmonton on the second half of a back-to-back also on Saturday. So
yeah, and I'm not sure about Edmonton. So Edmonton is missing Darnell Nurse and a few other pieces. I don't know if they'll be back or not for that. That's actually key.
Right.
That'll be.
Yeah. But I guess we'll see how Simon Holmstrom, Michael Dal Colle, and Cole Bardreau look.
I am really excited. I mean, Holmstrom has pleasantly surprised us in the AHL, and I think now that he might actually be an NHL player. Bardreau is what he is, you know. I'm excited to see MDC. I've always been the president of the Michael Dal Colle fan club. I know he is what he is, and I know he has his limitations, but I'd love to see this guy stick. I really would. I'd love to see him stick, and he's going to get a chance, so I'm excited to see him tomorrow night. BD, what are you going to leave us with?
Oh, wait. Can you hear me now?
We can hear you. You're here. Where did you go, buddy?
My headphone mic, I guess, ran out of battery. So.
Ran out of battery? What is it, 1989?
I don't know. It's usually pretty good, but ran right through. What can I say?
BD. Yeah, we're gonna GoFundMe for your headphones for batteries. BD, give us some last thoughts. Tie us up here. We got the Buffalo game coming up. Well, we got Edmonton coming up.
Look, whoever's playing, the players need to stop underachieving. That's the key. They're underachieving. We need to see that right the ship. That is the first place that you can get things at least back on track. Start to have the players that you expect to perform to the level they need or that they were or are to be, and not have this fall off for all these key players that are underachieving. If you have that start to move up, then you can start to think that the ship to be righted. Maybe the goaltender goes on a tear, all these other things, but that's really what needs to start happening. Win or lost in these, you know, tattered games and whoever's playing, those players that are underachieving need to be able to achieve. And the more that we see Robin Salo, the better.
Yeah, the less we see Sebastian Aho, for me, the better. I won't bet on the New York Islanders tomorrow night because right now the odds are a little bit prohibitive. Right now, I think the New York Islanders are like -195. But I do think the Islanders will win as long as we don't see Aho and we see Salo in the game. If Aho is playing, I might even bet on Buffalo. He's that bad.
I think he might have to play. I don't know who else is available because I think they're going to go 11-7. But we'll see.
11-7 might be okay. Then maybe only plays like 4 minutes.
I think they have exactly 12 forwards technically available now that Martin came off. I just don't know that they're going to put Martin back on the ice with his injury when he hasn't skated in 12 days. Yeah. They might. I mean, crazier things have happened, but I guess we'll see.
It's a good point. Hey, I'm going to leave you with one prediction, and then I do want to wrap it up. But for me, are we all on the same page that what's going to happen is the Islanders are going to go on a little bit of a win streak in January just do just enough to make sure that Lou doesn't trade any pieces away, and then we're still not going to make the playoffs?
That seems to be, I would be in agreement if that's the likelihood.
I think that's the likeliest scenario. The likeliest of all scenarios is
the worst.
As a ninth place finish.
Which would be, okay, that would be the worst. Okay. Well, there you go. I was enjoying trashing the Rangers before. Hey, happy New Year's to both of you.
Same to you, sir.
You too, David.
And we'll talk in the new year. For everybody listening, if you guys like the show, subscribe. And tell your friends about it. You can follow us on Twitter. BD is at BD Golliff on Twitter. Phil Farber is at Phil's Facts. That is Phil Z Facts on Twitter. You guys can check him out there. Always intelligent, always opinionated. I am at Tuck on Sports. Thank you for listening. Bye-bye.